भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
This morning we're going to read from Canto 3, Chapter 1, Texts 15 and 16. Where we ended yesterday. The peace mission of Krishna was not successful. Duryodhan insulted Krishna and tried to attack Krishna, and without a fight he was defeated. Then Duryodhan, Dhritarashtra, wanted to seek counsel from Vidura, so Vidura offered his counsel. And in the course of offering counsel, he spoke very directly about the situation and gave his recommendation. Now comes Duryodhan's nasty response. Very famous or infamous response. Text 15. Who asked him to come here? This son of a kept mistress. He is so crooked that he spies on the interest of the enemy against those who support he has grown up. Toss him out of the palace immediately and leave him with only his breath. This is his uncle he's speaking to. Not only his uncle, but learned, wise, respected member of the royal family. Prabhupada explains the term dasya-sutam. Dasya-sutam means that he's the son or the offspring of the maidservant of the queen. And Prabhupada explains this system that part of the dowry at times when a queen or a very elevated aristocratic lady was married, she would have maid servants, and the maid servants not only served the queen, but due to intimate contact, the maid servants also bore children. And so they were called dasi putras, or in the verse it's dasya sutam. So in that situation, the dasi putras or the dasya sutam, those children were treated with dignity and respect like members of the royal family, except they were not given royal positions. They weren't ministers or kings in any formal capacity. So that was the situation with Vidura. And Duryodhan, two things. Duryodhan is pointing to his birth, and Duryodhan is also pointing to his action and calling him a spy. And the spy means friends and enemies. And we know what Prahlad Maharaj says about friends and enemies. It's not within the experience of, or or it's not within the consciousness of one who's on the transcendental platform like Prahlad. So Prahlad says to his father, I've heard about this, those who see friends and enemies, but now I'm seeing it. And you're thinking, Lord Vishnu is my enemy. And a transcendentalist doesn't see like that. But Hiranyakashipu was seeing like that. So one who is so attached, Prahlad describes, one who is so attached to the bodily concept of life, that person can't be helped by others. They can't help themselves, or a combination of the two. It's a very unfortunate circumstance. So deeply attached to the bodily conception that he who was actually his well-wisher, Vidura was actually his well-wisher, he was seeing him as a friend of our enemy. So, going back to yesterday's discussion, the minister, the advisor that Shakuni had suggested Dhritarashtra take advice from, Kanika explained the same thing. Your sons see the Pandavas as enemies. And because of your attachment to your sons, they're your enemies. You don't feel that they're enemies, but your sons feel that they're enemies, so they're your enemies. And the intensity of ill will from your sons towards the Pandavas says you have to do something about it. You can't just elevate them. You have to remove them. Otherwise, there's division within the family. An irreconcilable going over time, further widening and widening division within the family. And you can't have that. You're the king. You have to bring unity, certainly within the family. So you have to get rid of the Pandavas. And they're very powerful. So you have to use trickery to get rid of the Pandavas. You can't use noble means. You can't use Kshatriya means. You have to use dirty means. He's advising him irreligion. He's advising him starting with friends and enemies and then unfair means or turn to irreligion. And the attachment of Dhritarashtra was so great that he was thinking, yes, he's right. I don't know what unfair means I should use, but I should use unfair means because they're enemies. Shukuni is behind the scene. So, Duryodhan was also seeing like that, friends and enemies. Pandita Samadarshana, it's just the opposite for a learned person. We were discussing this in Chicago. The Dvita was bringing this point up. We both spoke Sunday morning on Krishna as the reconciler of apparent opposites. Or, what's the word? Discrepancies. Things that cancel each other out. If you have this, you can't have that. But Krishna is the reconciler of those opposites. And one of them that he was bringing up was Krishna's apparently contradictory statement where he says, Name dvesho stina priyaha. I don't have affinity towards one, and dvesha, dislike towards others. I see equally all. But then, immediately he says, but one who is my devotee, he's very dear to me. That sounds like a contradiction. So he very nicely explained it, that position of Krishna. Krishna doesn't see friend and enemy. A transcendentalist like Krishna doesn't see friend and enemy. They may see, oh, like Krishna sees, here is someone who is inimical towards me. They would like to see me as their enemy. Okay. I will act as they wish me to act as their enemy. But he's not feeling inimical towards them, although it may appear. And one who is very dear to me, one who sees me very dear to them. It's not just play acting, where Krishna says, okay, I'll pretend that they are very dear to me. He holds them very dear to him. He's reciprocating with yayatam mam prapadyante tang sadaiva pajamyaham. When Krishna killed Shishupal, he liberated him. Whereas great yogis, ascetics, tapasvis, and so on, very pious people, persons that perform lifetimes of sacrifice according to the Vedas, they may not achieve liberation. Anyway, but Krishna didn't feel animosity towards Shishupal. He gave him liberation. And so on. In the purport, Prabhupada is using, well, I'll read the sentence. He uses the word infidel. And Prabhupada had a very special way in which he would use that word infidel. Duryodhana not only attacked Vidura's birth, but also called him an infidel, because he seemed to support the cause of Yudhisthira, whom Duryodhana considered his enemy. So, Prabhupada uses this word infidel. He said, in the following way, he said that in Christianity, those that do not accept the teachings of Christianity or the Bible, they're called heathens. Those that are from Islam, one who does not support the teachings of Islam, they're called an infidel. And you know, all of this radical Islamic stuff, you know, regularly they would label somebody that they don't like an infidel. And especially when you're a terrorist, it means, you know, they should be killed. Besides bad, it means, you know, let's destroy this infidel. All infidels should be destroyed at whatever cost. And Prabhupada similarly said that the terminology within the Vedic culture is asura. And it's, you know, one who does not accept the personality of Godhead. Whatever, however elevated they may be. Learned, wealthy, Bollywood star, cricket player, whatever. The criterion of what their position is in terms of their acceptance of the personality of Godhead. So here, he's using the word infidel, where Duryodhana is considering Vidura an infidel. So in one sense, it's like you don't accept my religion, so you're an infidel. And what's the religion of Duryodhana? I'm number one. and anybody who doesn't accept me as number one is an infidel, because there are the people, there are other people that similarly don't accept me that way, the Pandavas, so they're an enemy. Just like Hiranyakashipu, it was his own son. And consider, what did Prahlad do that was bad? He had affection for his father. He didn't speak badly about his father. He was obedient to his father. He just saw Vishnu as the Supreme Lord. On that basis, his father was ready to kill him. So, the religion of a Duryodhan type person is, I'm number one, and I make up the rules of how you're supposed to respect number one. And you don't do that, and you're an infidel, you're an enemy, and you're fit to be destroyed. And the behavior of Vidura that placed him in that category, as far as Duryodhan was concerned, you're siding with the Pandavas. You're speaking to my father in support of or in favor of the Pandavas. So you're a spy, or you're an infidel, you should be destroyed. Just like that. But because you're my uncle, then we'll just throw you out of the palace. We won't kill you. We'll just throw you out of the palace with no possessions and beat you with a cane until you have nothing but your breath. Toss him out of the palace immediately and leave him with only his breath. Vidura was struck with wonder at such unexpected behavior from his nephew Duryodhan. And before anything actually happened, he decided to leave the palace for good. Then, the next verse is what he did. Besides, he left. Thus, being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. So it's a very interesting discussion in the purport about he's a devotee, so how does he see the external energy as supreme? External energy is not supreme. Krishna is supreme, but Krishna is directing the external energy. And for those who are averse to Krishna, the external energy acts upon them, as it was acting upon Duryodhan. So this is a nice philosophical point that requires a little attention and it gets a little subtle. The gist of it is that something, one event can simultaneously be the action of the external energy for one and the internal energy for another. And it's all dependent upon their disposition or their regard for Krishna. But addresses this. He says, in spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path toward his own ruination. He was upset not that he had been insulted. He was upset or concerned that Duryodhana was paving his path to ruination or paving his path to hell by such insulting words. We'll say it differently. The opposite is it's like Narada when he met Nalakuvera and Manigriva. On the one hand, what Nalakuvera and Manigriva did, besides it was abominable and disgusting, it was insulting to Narada that in that situation they shamelessly stood naked before Narada. Like, you know, who are you? And he's Narada. So it's insulting. But Narada didn't feel insulted. Rather, he felt very sorry for these two young men that were in such a state that they were so degraded. And they would have to suffer so much for that degradation. And moreover, they could be very hurtful to others because of their position and the pride in their heart, intoxicated with pride. So he was concerned for their welfare. It's a nice lesson. We're not Vidura, but the people we have to deal with are also not Duryodhana. And if someone who we're dealing with makes some remark that's not complimentary or stronger, that's inappropriate or it's abrasive or even insulting, how do we take it? How should we take it? By following this nice example as being presented here, think about the situation of the other person. How much misery they're going through that they can speak this way or act this way, and where's their destination? Where are they headed? Very bad. How unfortunate. So Prabhupada writes, Vidura, therefore, considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. That's exactly what it says in the in the verse. That is, ruling over the superior energy. Because we know from Bhagavad Gita, there's eight separated material energies. What's the verse? Bhumirapo nalovayu kammano buddhir evacha ahankara ityame bina prakriti ashtada. There's ashta, there's eight separated energies. Bina prakriti. Eight separated energies. But aside from those energies, there's a superior energy. Para prakriti. So the soul is superior to matter. But if the soul is inimical to the supreme, then prakriti, the bina prakriti, rules the para prakriti. It's upside down. The inferior energy rules the superior energy, so the inferior energy becomes superior. He was completely in the grip of the external energy, Duryodhana. Therefore, this was the act of the external energy, acting in a superior or supreme way above Duryodhana. At the same time, he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him. in that particular situation. So how did it help him? That's another thing that we should, when we're in an awkward situation like this, how might we be benefited by Krishna and the internal potency? Well, that takes, you know, a deep person to go there, but it's what Vidura did. And two things that are mentioned. One is, hey, now I have the opportunity to go to the holy places and become purified. Because before that moment, he is a very service-minded individual. And he wanted to do good. But his doing good wasn't a compromised do good. It was the real deal. And he tried. And it got to a point where he realized my capacity of trying is not effective. So let me take another service. And a service of self-purification so that perhaps I can become more effective in my efforts. So he left. Without a moment's hesitation. But so he didn't leave storming out, oh, you've insulted me, I'm leaving you. Like people do sometimes. That wasn't what was going on. It's my service effort is not bearing fruit. So let me take one that will bear better fruit. And the other that's mentioned is that he had a very difficult, as Bhishma had a difficult decision to make. Bhishma, like Vidura, certainly knew the principles of Dharma. And sometimes balancing the principles of Dharma becomes very complicated. Because there's that one Dharma that says do this, and a different Dharma that says do that. And how do you decide between this and that? Give a practical example. We're practicing devotees. And we have some relative that expects something of us that says this. And we have our other kinds of practices, duties, and sensibilities that says do that. And they're mutually contradictory. Do this or do that. How do I balance this? How do I make the right decision? I want to fulfill the expectations of certain persons in my life, but to fulfill those expectations means I compromise my Krishna consciousness. And what to do? As an example. There's so many examples. So it's difficult sometimes. Now, in that particular kind of example, we place service unto Krishna in the superior position. That's how it works. Which principle is superior above another principle? And that principle that's superior takes precedence. Like in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna gives arguments in favor of nonviolence. Prabhupada gives superior argument that says a kshatriya must be. What to speak of when it's for religious principle? Dharma yuddha, religious fighting. It's irreligious for the kshatriya to not take up religious fighting. If the kshatriya doesn't, then where's protection? He must. So this principle is higher than that principle. But if you do it the other way around, in ordinary circumstances, if the powerful kshatriya kills or inflicts injury on others without religious principle, oh, he's in big trouble. So that principle takes precedence over the other. Or in law, capital punishment. Killing is not to be done. But in some cases, killing is to be done. Anyway. So there's examples in our lives where there's conflict between one principle and another principle, a principle of Dharma. And how do you balance them? You know, like speaking the truth when the truth might hurt. How do you balance it? Speak the truth palatably. Well, sometimes that's very challenging, how to speak the truth palatably, depending upon the attachment of the person that you're dealing with. So how do you address that? So Vidura had one of those situations. The situation was, as was mentioned by Duryodhan in the previous verse, he had been maintained by the royal family. He spies in the interest of the enemy against those on whose support he has grown up. So because he was this Dasiputra, he had accepted the maintenance of his life by the king. So he's indebted to the king. Those who maintain us were indebted to. So be very careful who you accept maintenance from. Because by Dharma principle, there's some support that's required. So because, and that's the basis of Bhishma's, although he knew that Duryodhan and company were wrong, it was a principle of Dharma that he had accepted their maintenance, and so it was his obligation to fight on their side. And Drona, he was a Brahmin, but he was skilled in military science, and so he was obliged, although he knew they were wrong. And Vidura would have to make the same decision. He wasn't going to become a king, but he knew he was... He knew how to use bow and arrow. He was trained in that way. So he would have had to make the same decision. Fight on religious principle on behalf of Duryodhan, or don't fight and put himself at the risk of violation of a religious principle of some kind. Not necessarily the highest kind, but of some kind. But he didn't have to make the decision. It's very nice. So, ceremoniously and symbolically, when he left, he picked up his bow and arrows. When you see the picture, look at the picture. As he's leaving the painting, at the door, there's the bow, there's the arrows, signifying, I'm not fighting. I don't have to make this decision. Fight, not fight. I don't need to make that decision. Thank you very much. He just left. Relieved of that awful situation. Krishna is very kind. That's how he was feeling. Here's how Prabhupada writes. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhan to fully, unrestrictedly engage in the loving service of the Lord. And instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to be alone in a holy place and fully engage in devotional service of the Lord. The word gata vyataha, or without being sorry, gata vyataha, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow because his brother was meant for ruination. Dhritarashtra. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhan could act. Because Duryodhan was such an abominable person, he wouldn't just insult Vidura and then say he should be driven out. He would call the order, grab him, beat him with a cane and throw him out. It would have, that was next. Thus Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally, so that Yoga Maya, Naham Prakasha, Sarvasya, Yoga Maya Samavrata. This term Yoga Maya, we normally, in our ISKCON use of the term, it's the internal energy of the Lord, is Yoga Maya. Like, Yoga Maya arranges Krishna's pastimes. That's Yoga Maya. But in that verse, and from Bhagavad Gita, it's Yoga Maya that keeps mudho yam nabhi janati, those who are mudhas, from understanding Krishna. That's not the same as Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. It's the external energy. So Krishna can engage his internal energy this way and the expansion of his internal energy in that way. The expansion of his internal energy is the external energy, or it's the energy transformed. So in one situation, here's a devotee, here's a non-devotee. So people, devotees ask this question, when this thing happened, is this Maya or is this Krishna? Is this the internal energy or the external energy? And here's an example where it can be, depending upon one's regard for Krishna, can be both. Same situation. Name dvesho sti. So, stina priyaha. Krishna is not favorable to one and has animosity towards the other. But the external energy acted on Duryodhan, and the internal energy was acting in Vidura's favor. So he could increase his devotional service directly unto Krishna. Okay? See if there's any discussion on this. Yes? About which? Ah, Kanika, yes, yes.
Dhritarashtra's court, how come he was advising Dhritarashtra when
because Shukuni was his brother-in-law and said, hey, I've got a great advisor. And Dhritarashtra had, you know, affection for Shukuni. He, you know, Shukuni buttered him up, so he, you know, oh, you're my friend. You're my wife's brother. You support me. You have someone that you feel is a good advisor. Oh, very good.
Because sometimes you may see that even within our close friends or family.
Within our what?
Within our own close, like within the family or giving those, how do we actually see that those advisors, I mean, not, but I was trying to ask Maharaj, sometimes we have around us where we get advice or suggestions, how do we see that and apply it to our spiritual path and not
we take good advice where good advice comes from. It's not like I'm not sure The problem is not, oh, they're not from our group or something like that. Here's a person with some advice that's not from our group. You take good advice where good advice comes from. In a neophyte condition, neophyte stage of life, it's very important that you're a parent. So you don't want just any old person that comes along instructing your children. Right? You don't mind if there's a person who you know that their instruction would resonate nicely with your instruction. And in fact, that person's responsibility is to not contradict anything that you would say, but to support that which you would say, but say it in their own voice. Because otherwise the child is going to be confused. It'll make order and harmony within the family disrupted. But mommy, they said this. I don't care they said this. It's not this, it's that. So it can be confusing. So when in a, similarly, like children, in a beginning stage, we should hear from one person. And if there are other persons that are advising, they should, it's a rule. It's like, you know, it's common sense. Where there's respect, the common sense is followed. Some situation is brought to person B. So person B says, oh, what did person A tell you when you brought this to their attention? And we said something. Person B should not say, oh, that's ridiculous. You shouldn't do that something. You should do something else. If they don't feel that particular message is correct, they should say something like, let me think about it, and go to person A and say, is this how you instructed this devotee? And they may say, I didn't say that. This is what I said. Oh. Well, they think that you said what they said you said. I think it would be a good idea if you corrected that misunderstanding, rather than person B correcting that misunderstanding and then weakening the faith in the person they're hearing from. And if it was a misapplied understanding, then let the person who gave that misapplied direction some different consideration. Let them adjust the instruction. So, particularly in a newer stage of Krishna consciousness, that fidelity is very important. In a more mature stage, it happens as a child grows up, they naturally interact with other people. And then they're starting to see other standards besides what they see in the home. Hey, how come they do that and we don't? How come they watch that or eat that or go there, you know, and we don't? And so on. So it's nice to have a community that supports the same values. So then the children don't see different standards. And then same for the adults. It's nice that we have a community that accepts the same standards so we can follow. Although there's plurality because that's the world. That's the real world. So then, in the real world, we can respect differences and remain faithful to the standard that we have been trained. Especially the standard matches the standard that Prabhupada gave. Does that help? Okay. Something else?
Maharaj, thank you for the class. During the class, you mentioned about one point, that is to be careful about from whom we are getting the maintenance. So we, as devotees, we work for different corporations, different companies, and they have their different agendas.
That's different. What I meant is in charity. Specifically, I meant charity.
Okay.
If you work for a butcher, that's not a good idea. But the purity of employers in the marketplace of the world is where are you going to find an employer that employs purity? So what I meant specifically was this was charity. In scripture, there's explicit advice to not accept charity from sinful people. Of course, we do that in a general sense. Whoever puts money in the hundi box, there's not like a barometer attached to their arm that says, their level of sinfulness crosses a certain point and the money jumps out of the hundi box. But on the other hand, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave that instruction to all Vaishnavas in relation to a Dvaita Acharya having a debt and from borrowing money from King Prataparudra. And so a Vaishnava should be very careful where he receives, from whom he receives money. And there's some instructions in that regard from worldly people. It contaminates the mind. Then there's this balance with, we want to engage people. Not just we want their money, but we want them to engage in some service. And we don't want to become attached to, here's a person that can give a lot of money. And so, we become, compromised in our dealings with the person because they'll give a lot of money. That's part of what happens if one is not in a very purified state. There's one example of this. There was some persons that from whom Srila Prabhupada received a contribution for his book fund. Then he was told later that the person who gave this donation for the book fund engages in drug trafficking. So Prabhupada immediately gave the money back, said, take the money back and give it back to the person. It's not like a hard and fast meaning like this other, how do you gauge that, at what point do you not accept money from somebody because their sinfulness is over a certain limit versus people, everyone has some contamination, and how do you engage them in giving up the fruits of their work if you can't accept it because they have some contamination? So that's, it's a another one of those where you draw the line questions. For your personal employment or anyone else's employment, it's another one of, you know, where do you draw the line? But if we don't take up jobs in houses of prostitution, liquor shops, and meat establishments. But there's degrees of contamination in almost everything of this world. So we try to stay, you know, you get the idea. It's a time, place, circumstance. It's not a cookie cutter rule. There's contamination in this world. Try to position your career so that it's, you know, you're not doing the, you know, directly assisting in the most sinful things. At the same time, not being radical about how you make your job decisions. Like one devotee, I forget the terminology that he uses, but he has, you know, there's forget it occupations, there's compromised occupations, and there's more or less motive goodness occupations, or at least not sinful occupations. And his advice to other grihasthas is try to find something in that range. That's not directly engaging in sinful, promoting something sinful. You know, but let's say technology, the practical application of technology is where it makes money. And the technology itself isn't sinful. But how it gets applied can very easily be sinful. But the activity itself of creating the technology isn't sinful. Like, you know, computer technology. But then you write a program and someone can use it for a sinful purpose. Okay. Yes?
Hare Krishna. My question is regarding the, it seems like from the lecture that we have a choice to either act in the internal energy or external energy in situations.
Well, our choice is favorable to Krishna, unfavorable to Krishna. And that's the internal energy, external energy choice.
So like when we are in a challenging exchange situation, like the exchange that happened between Vidura and Duryodhana, so it seems like Vidura didn't, he chose to not invest his consciousness in the feeling of being hurt, and rather his consciousness went in the other direction.
Yeah.
So when we are in those situations, how should we cultivate that thing that we don't invest our consciousness too much in the feeling of being hurt?
It's where's your shelter? Exactly. It's not exactly choosing this one or that one. It's where you see your shelter. If the shelter is I am this body, then you're going to feel hurt. And if the shelter is Krishna, you're not going to feel hurt. Where's your shelter? So we need to cultivate taking shelter of Krishna. And that's the internal energy. And the external energy can't act when one is strongly within the internal energy. When the light's on, there's no darkness. When one's resistance is strong, one doesn't contract a disease. Prabhupada gives the example of the doctor before going into a place where there's a rampant disease, whatever you call that, he takes some inoculation. So he can go into that place, the epidemic. Where there's an epidemic, they can go into the epidemic place and be protected. So that our that vaccine is for us in this material world is our shelter in Krishna. Apapa vidham. It can't be infected, even in a contaminating atmosphere. Where a resistance is strong, you won't contract disease. So, the resistance isn't just like armor and shield and, you know, defense. It's positive. It's shelter in Krishna. We're still careful. And if the tendency of the mind, it's like Dhruva, when his brother Anupam was killed by the Yakshas, he got carried away. He became very angry. But just by hearing, he left that anger. So, by hearing through a devotee or from scripture or some certain, you know, when you're in a difficult, you have a challenging situation, it just puts you back in shelter of Krishna position. If that has been nicely cultivated and a circumstance is provoking some other tendency, then shelter in Krishna. Otherwise, if the shelter in Krishna position doesn't become covered, then all the nice teaching, all the nice advice, all the transcendental wisdom is protecting. And, you know, the challenging situation becomes neutralized by that transcendental wisdom. Something else? Yes, over here.
Hare Krishna. This Kaur Pandav Leela, is this a Leela or like Leela of one of Krishna's Leelas, and is it a Nitya Leela? And if it's not, how do you tell? And as a rule of thumb, or is there a rule of thumb to say which one is a Nitya Leela, which one is not?
It's not a Leela of Krishna. This is his devotee. Vidura. We don't exactly describe that an activity of an exalted devotee like Vidura is Krishna's Leela. But it's the activity of his pure devotee that's within the internal energy. It's in relation to Krishna. It's Krishna Katha. It's relation to Krishna. It's not exactly Krishna's Leela. A devotee is Vidura's serving Krishna. That's Vidura. Going back to the 13th chapter of Canto 1, Prabhupada explains that Yamaraj has this difficult situation. He's always dealing with sinful people and sinful circumstances, and it's, you know, very difficult. He never gets to directly associate with Krishna. So Krishna gave him this opportunity. Although it looked like a bad situation, he was cursed to take birth as a Shudra, and then he could directly take part in Krishna's pastimes with him. And part of his service unto Krishna was helping elevate the consciousness of those who he was in the royal palace with. But because of the nature of palace intrigue, it didn't work out that way. So because he's serving Krishna, it's the internal energy, but it's not in the same, I wouldn't label it as Krishna Leela. So your question is, what's the rule of thumb? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. That's, you know, the rule of thumb. They're always engaged in Krishna's service with love for Krishna. And not something else, not selfish. The rule of thumb of Duryodhana is selfish. It's all about him. And you know, that's how he decides what is to be done and what is not to be done, what's favorable to him. And what's favorable to him, just ask him. Vidura was expressing what's favorable to him, but not by, you know, not on a selfish standard, on a Krishna-centered standard. That's the rule of thumb on the other side. Selfishness. Krishna's missing.
Yeah. Actually, my question is there a rule of thumb to say which Leela of Krishna is a Nitya Leela, or all Leelas of Krishna are Nitya Leela?
Oh. This is not Nitya Leela. Not Nitya Leela. It's very circumstantial. The pastime that Krishna, that the term Nitya Leela applies particularly to, the pastimes of Krishna that he directly performs. Like on the cover of the book is the Kaliya Dhamana Leela. So the details, according to Brihat Bhagavatamrita, are different in different appearances of Krishna. But it's Nitya Leela with variety. Brihat Bhagavatamrita, for example, it describes in the case of Keshi. In some cases, Krishna doesn't kill Keshi, he subdues Keshi. And then he keeps Keshi as a pet. And from time to time, the cowherd boys go for horseback rides on the back of Keshi. They have a great time riding Keshi. So that's Nitya Leela with some variety. Here this is Yamaraj being cursed to take birth as a sudra. The term is naimittik, or it's circumstantial, occasional. Anything else?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for such a wonderful class. Maharaj, when you mentioned this, in the case of relatives, when we go for...
In case of?
Relatives, Maharaj.
Relatives.
Yeah, with the... For there are things like situation like where we, if we don't satisfy them, like they may be the big obstacles in our devotional path, especially in case of relatives. So how do we take, Maharaj, like always there is a thumb rule we go for.
I brought it up deliberately because it's an issue that comes up a lot. The challenge is to not compromise your Krishna consciousness while at the same time not aggravating your relatives. That's the balance. But if it comes down to, do I compromise my Krishna consciousness? Do I eat forbidden things? Or do I not chant the holy name? You know, you don't violate standards that are to be performed. But to do them in such a way that they don't aggravate or agitate my relatives. So you do things positively. This is just a general rule of thumb type of advice. Do things that positively are, you know, agreeable. You're a nice son or a nice cousin or a nice whatever it is. You're just, you'll be very nice and go out of your way to be very, very nice. And your consciousness is not just so I can keep them cool. It's, this is a service to Krishna. And one of the recent ones was somebody was going back to India and they knew that their parents wanted to take them to the local temple where there's no Krishna, no Vishnu, it's something and something and something. You know, what should I do? And my advice was, go. And when you go like the mood of Lord Chaitanya, where here is a wonderful devotee of Krishna, and you're paying her respects to a wonderful devotee of Krishna. They're thinking differently, and you're thinking wonderful devotee of Krishna. So there's no problem in the, you know, disposition with the relatives. That's a detail, but the principle, don't compromise. At the same time, act in a way that's pleasing and makes, you know, helps them understand. The main convincing thing for relatives is that you are a very wholesome, good person. You're a very thoughtful, very kind, very considerate, all those nice things. Do all those nice things in service unto Krishna. And that relieves a lot of the tension. If so, even your practice of chanting, do your practice of chanting in such a way that you get up early and you do your chanting and other things like that when you're interacting with relatives at home. Details. But you got the principle. Yeah? Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you.